And good morning. It is 9:06 here on Community Speaks, brought to you by the Prescription Shop. Stop by the Prescription Shop on Fort Street in Buffalo for not only your prescription needs, but gifts and other knickknacks as well. Well, joining me here on Community Speaks today is Bud Stewart with Game and Fish. Good morning, Bud.
Good morning again, Brady. How you doing?
Yeah, doing well, doing well. It's nice to have you back. And this time we're going to talk about some different things. And the first thing we're going to talk about is draw results for resident and non-resident antelope and deer, and then resident elk that's going to be, what, tomorrow?
Yeah, the results of the draw will be made known tomorrow, June 22nd, okay, at 10 a.m. I mean, that is a... It's a big day, you know. Everybody is, they've been anticipating this. They put in for these licenses, hope they can draw the special elk or antelope or deer area. So tomorrow morning at, 2 seconds after 10 o'clock, our website's just going to be buzzing. Everybody's going to be checking to see if they drew.
Hopefully, so, it doesn't crash, right?
Well, yes. Hopefully it doesn't. That does not happen. We've tried to. You try to. I know our IT people anticipate those kind of things and try to do some stuff. But you know, when you get a few thousand people all trying to look at it exactly the same time, kind of overwhelms things. So, but those draw results, like I said, tomorrow 10 a.m. they'll be available. And then we're going to kind of do something a little different this year, Brady. The last few years, after the initial draw, which is we've just completed.
How many do you draw for in the initial draw, by the way?
Oh, it's resident deer, elk, and antelope, and non-resident deer and antelope. So, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, several thousand people that will know or been waiting for the results that will be made known tomorrow. So, yeah, you know, kind of depends on from year to year how many licenses are actually. And these are, of course, the limited quota licenses, because residents can go buy a general elk or a general deer over the counter.
Okay.
So, you know, and those will be available. I think I have it there. Those won't be available till about the middle of July. So, but after this initial draw, then we're gonna issue the licenses that are left over. We're gonna do that a little bit different. We're gonna have another draw this year. In past years, we've just named a date in. Typically in July, where it was first come, first serve, and that's when when the system went down, and it wasn't our Game and Fish website that was the issue; it was our credit card vendor. Uh-huh. You know, everybody trying to buy a license and put in, and everybody at, you know, usually those are like at 8 o'clock in the morning on, let's say, July 10th. Well, at 2 seconds after eight, everybody's hitting the button, and it overwhelmed the credit card vendor. They couldn't handle it, which is kind of weird, because this is the same credit card vendor that does the Friday after Thanksgiving, the Black Friday sales.
Sure.
I mean, you'd think across the, you know, all that, but everybody just trying to do it exactly the same time. So that really slowed things up, really messed things up last year. So this year, we're going to do it a little different. We're going to have a draw. So we're going to have an application period from June 26th to June 30th for any of the licenses that are left over after this initial draw. And of course, those will all be they'll all be on the website. It'll show what's available.
So then, are you saying that after the draw tomorrow, do the other people have to reapply?
Well, yeah. If they, whatever's left over, then there'll be an application period,
okay,
for those limited quota licenses. Those will be. There'll be a whole separate draw for those leftovers.
Okay.
And some of the Doe Fawn and some of those licenses. So that'll be June 26th to June 30th is that application period. And then it'll start 8 a.m. on June 26th, close at midnight on June 30th. And then the leftover draw results will be available on July 13th. There'll be another time when those leftover draw results will be available. And then after that, starting on July 17th, whatever's left over after that will just be first come, first serve. And that's the date that the resident general deer and elk licenses will become available. So, and the leftover draw has a little bit different rules than this, the initial draw. In the leftover draw, we just want people to know that there's no quota split. Resident and non-resident hunters go in all in the same. There is no 20% to non-residents, 80% to residents. It's just kind of a, you know, whoever applies in that draw. And residents and non-residents can apply together in a party, where in the initial draw you have to be all residents or all non-residents. Here it can be mixed. So if you have friends that are coming out and want to, you know, hunt some doe antelope or whatever, you can all put in the same party application. There's no application fees for this. The initial draw, there's application fees. This second draw, there are none. So that's different. And preference points can't be used, and you won't lose your preference points if you draw one of these leftover licenses. So that's and then the leftover draw license availability is based on what's not allocated in the initial draw. So it's whatever's left after this. What we find out tomorrow, then those will be the licenses that will be available in this whole second draw thing. So, you know, this is the way we used to do it. This second draw, we used to do that, oh, I don't know, 8-10 years ago. And, you know, we thought, well, let's just try it on a first-come, first-serve. And, you know, we found out that that overwhelms systems, and so we're going back to the draw, and hopefully it'll make things a little easier for folks. So just want people to know that. And all this information I just talked about here, Brady, is on the Game Fish website. And, you know, you can just Google Wyoming Game Fish Department. And then once you get there, there's a hunting tab. Click on that. And then when you do that, then it'll come up, and there'll be another tab that says leftover licenses. If you click on hunting and then leftover licenses, once you get to our website, all this information that I've talked about here is available right there. You can read all about it. And, of course, if you have any questions, you know, call your local game warden or biologist, or call the Sheridan office. That number is 307-672-7418. If you have any questions about this. And then another kind of important upcoming date is on July 1st. People can start buying preference points if you're a resident and didn't draw a moose or bighorn sheep license, or if you're a non-resident and didn't draw a deer, elk, antelope, moose, or bighorn sheep. You got from July 1st to October 31 to buy those preference points. So, and that's an important thing. You don't want to lose your standing in the preference point status. I mean, if you have maximum points, and you didn't draw or didn't put in for one of those licenses, well, if you didn't draw, you probably got issued one. But if you didn't put in this year for one of those, make sure you get that preference point so you're still at that maximum or one below or whatever you're at. You don't want to go downhill in that regard. So
sure. And the next thing we're going to talk about, of course, we're, you know, spring and into early summer, is juvenile wildlife. And people always think that they're, you know, saving the world by picking up a fawn or a baby animal of some kind because they think it's abandoned. But that's usually not the case, is it?
That's almost always not the case. You know, Brady, this is a, like I mentioned before we went on the air, this, I wish we didn't even have to talk about this, but I wish people would understand. But you know, we talk about this every year, as you well know. I mean, it's a topic that we just have to keep reminding people just to leave those juveniles, newborn wildlife alone. The mother is almost always there or close by. She knows where they're at, and she'll come take care of them if you leave them alone. But you know, we've had several instances already this summer, again, of you know, people that are see something. And you know, we had a Sheridan woman took home a little gosling that she found at the wetlands and assumed it was injured or abandoned and took it home to rehab it. And you know, if she just left it there, the mother would have taken care of it. You know, we had two young ladies up that lived out south of Sheridan. They found a newborn fawn deer, and they thought the doe had abandoned. They took it home, and then they contacted Game Fish, and one of our guys went out and you know, was it kind of later in the evening, of course, so he just talking to him, asking where they got it. They told him, so he said, "Well, we've got to take it back." And you know, the mother, the doe's probably there. We took it back, and there was a little clearing there. He put it down, and when he'd walk away, the fawn would follow him. It had kind of imprinted on him, you know, that that maybe he was the mother. You know, the young animals will do that. They'll imprint on the movement, and I mean, they can imprint on people or cars or whatever. Well, the doe deer was there. He saw he finally kind of got it. The fawn distracted and got away from it, and the doe come out, and they got reunited. So there's a happy ending to that story.
Well, in some of those cases, couldn't it be that even just the handling of the baby might leave that scent that maybe at that point that would then
be
abandoned?
There are times where that can be the case, exactly. Yeah. You know, you just, you kind of, a lot of times when you pick up these things and take them home, you kind of give them a death sentence, really. I mean, because it's tough then to get them back. It really is. And, you know, the other one that, you know, this is kind of a perfect example of this situation. Had a woman living south of Sheridan there. She found a clutch of pheasant chicks and thought they were sage grouse. And so she wanted to take them home to save them. Well, it was late in the evening. She called Game and Fish, and of course, you know, it was a rainy, cool evening, and, you know, we couldn't take them back out then, and had to wait till the next morning. Well, by the next morning, most of those chicks had died, you know, and had she left them there, those pheasant chicks would have, more than likely, most of them would have survived, rather than most of them dead. So, you know, just those kind of things. Just talking to our local game warden here, Jim Seaman, had a call the other day about a calf elk that was caught in a fence. And there's a situation where it's probably good to call Game Fish and call them as soon as you can. And that way then he can go up and you know, try to get the calf out. In this particular case, the calf had, I think, had been in the fence upside down for like 6-7 hours. And he got it out of the fence and got it over, put it underneath a nearby tree. And, you know, hopefully I think the cow elk was not far away. But, you know, being in stress that long, there's probably a good chance that calf elk didn't make it.
Well, think if you were hanging upside down for 6 hours, that'd be awful.
I wouldn't make it an hour if I was hanging upside
That's right.
down, you know. So, you know, it just, these little critters are tough. And, you know, in a situation like that, you know, if you don't know who to get a hold of, call the sheriff's office.
Would you recommend that people don't try to go free it themselves?
Well, that sometimes is not a good idea. We know people do that, and they get them free, and they go on. And that's, you know, everybody wants to be a good Samaritan, and that's fine. But if you, you know, sometimes that could be dangerous doing that. They fight and can... you know, even getting an adult deer out of the fence, especially an adult buck late in the summer, fall, that has antlers, you know, those, they thrash around. A person could get hurt. So just a good idea to give us a call in those situations, and we will get there as soon as we can and take care of them. So but when there's little birds, things, just, you know, pretty much back away, leave them alone. You know, maybe if you have to move them some, if they're in the middle of the street, maybe just get them to the edge of the street or something. But don't take them home and
put them in your car.
Don't put them in
cold.
Your car. No, wrap them up in your coat and think they're, you know, it's, they're best left to the mother's care, or they really are.
Sure.
But.
Well, and Bud, as you look around right now, the water levels are high in the lakes. The streams are flowing pretty fast. How's the fishing around the area?
Well, you know, the fishing in certain areas has been really good, Brady. But you mentioned that stream thing, and that's a good topic to talk about. You know, we've got we're probably maybe just a little past the peak of spring runoff. Seemed like the creek through town has gone down. Maybe a foot or so. I have a little marker that I on the Lobin Street Bridge where I can tell how much it's up or down, and it looks like from its high point it's probably down about a foot, but still flowing pretty good. So there's kind of a little bit of a hazard factor there. If you're going to fish streams, just be real careful wading because that water's swift and it's cold.
How does that affect the fishing? To me, it would seem like when it's flowing that fast, it might not be as good fishing in the streams.
Well, you know, it can. It tends to concentrate the fish because they kind of move to the edges and can be. So if you're careful, you can still probably effectively fish some of that.
Okay.
But you know, and I'm sure it won't be very much longer. That stream will, Clear Creek will be down. Other streams will be down, and they'll clear up a little bit. You know, they're still running kind of off color, but they'll clear up, and the fishing will get really pretty good.
And a lot of that, as far as the off color, as you mentioned, a little darker. That's just picking up a lot of the dirt and the sediments on the side as it's up there, right?
Yep, it's just, you know, this higher water picks up and starts to transport the bed load, and of course that you know, the faster water has the ability to transport a little bit higher bed load, and as the velocity goes down and the flow goes down, the stream won't be able to carry that. So it'll start settling out, and it'll clear up, and the water will get definitely more clear, and of course then you can, you know, sometimes you can see the fish, and if you put your fly just at the right spot, you know, one's feeding, you can catch a fish, or you know, so that stream fishing, just have to be a little little careful this time of year. But you know, reservoirs is great fishing. Healy, DeSmet, you know, some of those have been fishing really well. You mentioned been having some pretty good luck at DeSmet.
I've been losing a lot
of
fish.
But at least you hook
catching
them.
Catching them, have them on, and then don't quite get them to the boat.
Right. So that's, you know, that's just, that's typical fishing, you know. You know, there's some, one, I mentioned Healy, and you know, if a person wants to catch a largemouth bass in this area, there's probably no better place than Healy right now. Our fish crew's been out there, and they're doing a catch and or a mark and recapture population estimate, and we've got a really good largemouth bass population in Healy. We have really good size structure and some good numbers of large fish. So might think about that if you're interested. Of course, tiger muskie, the unique species, the management there with them, and some pretty large ones. As we mentioned at the 7 o'clock hour, you know, there's been some fish in the high 30s, and even had a report of some in the low 40-inch mark that, you know, and those are darn nice fish. So Healy's just a great place to go. And like I mentioned, our fish crew has been doing that mark and recapture population estimate there at Healy. So if you catch a tagged bass and you're going to harvest that fish, we would really like to know, each one of those tags has a unique number on it. If you harvest a bass, you take that bass home, you can keep the tag, but we would appreciate it if you would call us and just tell us what the number is on that fish, because that kind of helps in that whole population estimate thing, knowing how many tagged fish are out there and stuff like that. So if you do that, just call the Sheridan office, let the fish division know what that tag number is. So
you're saying if you catch one and release it, then you don't need to call anybody?
No, you don't need to call anybody. Just know the fact that you've been one of the lucky ones that have seen one of those tagged bass. And you can record the number if you want and just turn it loose. It's just if you harvest it and remove it from the population, that's what's important as far as calculating that population estimate. So you know, in another group of waters that people around here always like to fish are the Alpine Lakes, the high mountain wilderness lakes. And, you know, it's here with third week of June, and anglers are starting to get up to the high mountain lakes. We had a talk to a fellow the other day that had been up to Romeo Lake. And so, you know, Romeo and Willow are a couple that has some grayling in them, and a lot of people like to get up there and catch grayling. So he made it to Romeo, said he had to go through some snow drifts and stuff over the trail, but he was able to get there. So people are starting to access those, and here in another, you know, couple weeks, there'll be each week now we go, it'll be a little more accessible and stuff. So people are you know, they're getting there, and it's, like I say, that time of year, and we had a, you know, great snowfall in the mountains. We still look up there and see a lot of white, which is, I mean, that's encouraging. So we'll have you know, some good streams all hopefully all summer long and stuff. So That's and you know, speaking of fishing, Brady, some of our wardens just wanted me to pass along the some reminders of fishing regulations. Some of our wardens have been seeing some of these violations of fishing regulations, and it has to do when there's length limits, and Muddy Guard 1 is a good example. At Muddy Guard 1, that if you're going to harvest a fish, which very few people do, but if you're down there fishing and you catch a fish over 20 inches and you want to harvest it, you can. That's in the regulation. But the whole body of that fish has to stay intact. You can't cut it in half, put it in your cooler. You can take the entrails out and the gills, so you can gill and gut them. But the whole length of the fish has to remain in while you're in the field or in transit. So till you get home, that fish has to. And the reason that's so the warden, if you get stopped by a warden or one of our biologists, they can measure how long that fish is and see that, okay, yeah, it's 21 inches. You're fine. So you just can't cut them in half where there's length limits. And where length limits do not apply, and say this is usually warm or cool water fishes. I don't think a lot of people do this with trout. But if you're walleye fishing in an area where there are no length limits and you flay, you're allowed to flay those fish when you're on the water or at the fish cleaning station. But you have to leave at least a 1 square inch patch of skin on that fillet, and that's just for identification. You know, so again, our wardens or you know whatever, they can identify that as a walleye or some other species of fish. So and that all that information, you know, that's on it's on page 5 of the 2017 fishing regulations. It's in that information's in the right hand column. And then the other thing we're seeing a little bit is anglers leaving the lake, whatever, they'll have fish and stuff in their live well. So they're transporting live fish, and that is against the law. So you know, you have to, once you leave that water, you can keep alive while you're on the water, but once you leave that water, those fish have to be killed.
So if I say I have just a fish I've got on you know, I've got him on a stringer, sure, keeping him alive while I'm fishing, and then put him in a cooler with ice. If he's technically not completely dead, that's illegal?
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, cooler and ice would probably be fine.
Okay.
It's just if you filled your cooler with water and tried to take a couple of them from, say, you're out of Lake Desmet, and you want to come back to town with them, actually leaving Lake Desmet with those live fish in that cooler would technically be a violation.
Is the reason for that so you're not transporting into another body of water?
That's exactly what the reason is, yeah. You know, we don't want people to, say, go to Healy and have 25, 30 yellow perch and take them to an area where we don't have perch. That's you know, sometimes
creates problems that way.
You can create problems that way, and that's the reason for that regulation. So just wanted to remind folks of that, Brady.
Absolutely, and we got a few minutes left here. We can hit a couple more things. Boat safety and registration, as you know, of course, we're talking about fishing and all that. People need to have their boats up to date as well.
Right. You know, they have to be properly registered, and, of course, life jackets. Again, I was just talking to local game warden, and he ran into some folks the other day that had a boat and didn't have their life jackets with them. Said they got to the water and, you know, 20 miles from town, realized when they got there, no life jackets.
Decided to chance it anyway.
And so they thought, yeah, let's just take a chance. Well, Jim happened to be there and had a little visit with him, you know, and stuff about that. So,
well, it's not safe. I mean, if you were to tip over, that would create a problem.
Oh, absolutely. It can create a big problem. And you know, unfortunately, at that point, we may go from, you know, trying to find a dead body, which that's something that we don't never want to have to do. But if you don't wear your life jacket, that could be the situation.
Yep.
Now, water's cold and this time of year, and Desmet most times of the year. It doesn't take very long being in that cold water. Hypothermia sets in and
depending on how you fall over or end up in the water, if you were to hit your head on something and, you know,
exactly,
knock yourself out,
yep,
you at least have a chance if you have a life preserver,
yeah,
on.
Yeah, if it would keep you right, maybe keep,
yeah,
your head
if
out
if
of the
get
water
lucky
for,
and, yeah, your,
yeah,
face,
you know,
is
for,
up.
and you know, you could come to in a minute or two and you might be fine, but if you are out and have no life jacket
and you're sinking,
your chances of survival are probably pretty nil. So you have to have a properly fitting life jacket, and that's extremely important. A lot of our wardens run into a family, mom, dad, and two kids. Well, they have four adult life jackets. Well, those adult life jackets are not properly fitting for the kids, you know. And when you have an 8, 10-year-old kid that, you know, doesn't weigh very much, one of those adult life jackets, you know, it'll keep them afloat, but they have to stay in the life jacket. Well, they go out, they'll just slip right out of those adult life jackets. So must be properly fitting. You know, a lot of folks are registering their boats now because it's got to the point that, you know, it's warm enough, they want to get out there. So, you know, get your boat registration. And, of course, almost every watercraft, there's one exception for our aquatic invasive species, AIS decal. So all hard-sided boats, regardless of how big they are, have to have one of those AIS stickers. The only boat that doesn't need an AIS sticker is an inflatable boat. So some kind of raft or float tube. Inflatable boats that are 10 foot or less in length are not required to have an AIS sticker. Every other watercraft has to have one before you launch into Wyoming water. That's the law. And so, you know, just wonder, because we're seeing a lot of the people, you know, kayaking has become extremely popular. And you can buy kayaks at, you know, geez, about every, seem like a lot of gas stations now or Walmart. And sometimes when you buy one there, you know, at most sporting goods stores, you buy one, they'll tell you, hey, you know, you got to have an AIS sticker on this. But you go through the checkout line at Walmart, a lot of those folks aren't knowledgeable about that. And so you buy it and go, you know, you're never told. And some of these people are new to the boating or kayaking, and so they're not aware. So just want to make people, all hard-sided boats, no matter what length, need one of those AIS stickers affixed to it. So it's just the inflatable ones, 10 foot or less, that do not need it. So.
And, Bud, now's kind of the time for people to start getting ready for the hunting seasons.
Well, yeah, we're talking about fishing and great time to go fishing, and fishing season maybe just kind of getting started. But, you know, hunting season's not that far away. I mean, we got some archery antelope seasons that will be open here in a couple months, you know. So now's time to get your equipment, whether it's your bow or your rifle, out and start to practice, you know, and take a look at it. Check out your equipment. You know, you might remember, oh, yeah, I broke that strap on my pack last fall. Haven't fixed it. Well, you know, don't wait till the night before you go and realize that. So get your equipment out, check it, replace worn or broken stuff and get all that ready. And you know, maybe start walking a little bit, get in shape. You know, you don't, especially if you learn tomorrow at 10 o'clock that you've drawn the elk tag or the mule deer tag that you've wanted for 10 years, you know, you might not, it takes 10 years to get one, you know, you don't want to miss the opportunity for a critter of your lifetime by not being able to make that distance, you know, go that, close on that 500 yards or whatever. So get out, do a little walking and practice with your rifle so you can, you know, get up there, get the shot you know, bag that animal that you've been hoping for all your life, basically.
Absolutely. Talking with Bud Stewart with Wyoming Game and Fish. Bud, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Hey, thanks, Brady.
Absolutely. We are going to take a time out, and then we'll come back, and we've got one more guest here this morning going to be talking with Bonnie and play Night at the Wax Museum. That'll be coming up next right here on Classic Country, 1450 AM and 103.5 FM, KBBS.